All right, welcome back to another episode of V8 Radio. I'm Kevin Ostie, joined again by our co-host, as always, Mr. Mike Clark.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
I don't know about everybody, but I'm okay.
Outstanding. Well, that's who matters.
Yeah, right. Finally, yeah. Finally, I matter. It's been years.
Right. Sometimes I think our wives would beg to differ.
Oh, there's times when you matter, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, once in a while.
Yeah. They matter all the time. That's the important
mm-hmm.
part. That's right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So today, this is, I'm actually in my garage because where I'm at, we had just a tremendous weather day. What happened by you?
I think we had about a high of about 62. Went into the city today in Chicago, and it was fantastic weather. I just had a sweatshirt on. Everything was perfect, even in the shade. It was just a glorious day.
Yeah, I was really getting some cabin fever over here, and we bumped 70 today. It's fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah, so
that is fantastic.
It was a good day to play with old cars. So I took my took my old Buick out for a ride. Recently made some audio upgrades on that one and fixed a few things. And
right.
You know, that's one of the simple pleasures, man. You know, windows down, tunes up. Just having a nice day on the road, and it was killer.
That really cures a lot of ills, it's for certain.
Yeah, yeah. What's you got a favorite playlist to go cruising to or driving to?
Well, in my GTO,
in the garage.
Running, yeah, it's in the garage. Excuse me, I you know what? It's funny is I haven't had, even when it was on the road, I haven't had a radio in it for some time.
Mm-hmm.
The radio that was in there, it was always kind of hard to hear over the engine.
Right,
and
right.
I
as
just
it should
found
be.
That I just liked hearing the engine better.
Yep.
So I just cruised to that. And if I wanted to change the tone, I'll just put the gas down a little bit further and it gets a little louder. So it's
there
perfect.
You go. Yeah, there's something to that also. I mean, there are times when, you know, maybe I would be one of those guys who digs a set of cutouts because there are times when all I want to hear is open headers, and then there's other times where it's like, you know, I wouldn't mind a little quiet. Let me listen to this tune. And the Riv is definitely not a loud car. Mm-hmm. We put an exhaust system on it in the spring that consists of a pair of basically stock mufflers, which on that thing are about 200 feet long and about, you know, 15 feet around ovals to try and quiet down that 455. But we added a pair of Magnaflow resonators in the back. So it has a surprising amount of volume at idle. It's got I don't want to call it a rumble because it's a stock cam. So it's not like, you know, a race car, but it definitely has some meat to the idle. But going on the road, it quiets out, you know, kind of nicely. So I just installed one of those custom audio systems that we do quite a bit of in the shop. And today was kind of my maiden voyage to go out and crank the windows down and see if this thing could compete with the wind noise and the sound of the car. And I think we won, which is good. That system, the system rocks. So I was impressed.
Oh, cool. Glad to hear that.
I was glad to hear it, too. That's why I installed it.
Yeah, I bet you were. I bet you were.
But I know what you mean. You know,
touché.
Yeah. Well, for years and years and years, you know, I love music. I like listening to loud music, but I was never one to have the money or the resources or the priority to put a giant audio system in one of my own cars, at least one of my own, you know, muscle cars. There was a time period when I lived in California, I had a commuter car. I had an 88 16-valve VW Scirocco, of all things, which
sweet.
It was pretty cool. It got like 40 to the gallon, and it was still fun to drive.
Yeah.
And I did the you know, the box in the back with a pair of 12-inch Sherwin Vega subs and a giant amplifier and everything. So that was like driving a speaker box, you know. So that one definitely had some
absolutely.
Tunes, but nothing in any of the old cars until this one. You know, outside of the prerequisite pair of 6x9s on the back speaker tray and, you know.
Right.
Some
of course.
Some kind of disc player shoved in the glove box.
Mm-hmm. My I used to have a 77 Formula Firebird when I was in the Air Force, and one of my friend's moms had this Blaupunkt CD player that she wanted to sell. I said, "Sure, I'll buy that." So I got this CD changer, which was great, and this was in 1990 or so.
Yeah, they were hot items then,
so
man.
CDs were still all the rage. Oh, yeah. And so I had that installed, and I had an audio shop install an amp and some really strong speakers on the rear package tray, of course. And that was probably the loudest, clearest audio system I ever had in a car. And it was very loud. It would rattle all the windows and the mirrors and all that. And,
yeah.
I think it's the cause of why I say what quite a bit when someone's talking to me.
Yeah, I believe it.
What?
Yeah.
Didn't hear you. What?
Right. Yeah, a big part of it. When I was at that same time period, a good friend of mine had an 87 Monte Carlo SS, black T-top car, just an awesome car. You know, basic stock. Ooh. 305, a couple of things that you would do back then. I think it had a shift kit, and it had some Flowmasters on it, and, you know, nothing real crazy, but the audio system was right. An Alpine head unit and Infinity plate speakers in the doors and a couple of Infinity 6x9s in the back and then a pair of 12s in the back with some Rockford Fosgate amps. I mean, this guy had some resources for being, you know, an 18-year-old to be able to afford this stuff. But we had great times in that car because it was a rolling concert everywhere you went. You know, the hair bands cranked up in the summertime with the T-tops off.
Yes.
It was awesome.
Uh-huh. That sounds awesome. Taking me back a bit.
That's right. It was a good time. Well, that's what these things are all about. You know, you get in the old car and it mm-hmm. transports you, especially, you know, like in my case, I'm lucky enough to have a similar car now that I did then. So it's total time warp. And in your case, the GTO has been around in your family for quite a long time.
Yeah. And, well, yeah. Also, I mean, I had... When I was still in the Air Force, I had a GTO already when I was about, you know, 19 years old. It was my first GTO, and after that, I had my 66 Le Mans.
Right.
So having the GTO now, I mean, I just got my hands on that GTO 8 years ago. I, you know, pried it out of my old man's hands, and that's a time warp every time I sit in it. I mean, it just reminds me of, you know, when you're a teenager and... you know, doing stupid things.
Well, yeah. And that's,
it's a good time.
It is. And that's what keeps a lot of this industry going. I mean, sure, there's new generations and people that never experienced that kind of stuff that always thought those cars were cool. So they want one now. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these people are the ones that want them modified with new technology and, you know, fuel injection and modern suspension and all the rest, because they don't necessarily care about that nostalgia or just the shape of the car itself provides enough of it. But they don't want the hassles of the old car, you know, so that.
Right. They don't want to set points and, you know, they don't want to, you know, do any of that, you know, adjust a carburetor or, you know, set timing or any of that kind of stuff. They just want to get in, turn it on and go.
Yeah, we're spoiled. You know,
there's something to be said about that, but.
Well, new cars are so reliable that you just don't have that problem anymore. And I know I've had this Buick now for going on about a year and a half, and I'm about to put my third accelerator pump in the carburetor because they just fail. And then you step on the gas and it coughs.
Right.
And then there's a truck coming. And, you know, I guess that adds to the thrill, but not an experience I want to keep having.
Huh. Wonder why they keep failing on you.
You know, what's funny is the one that lasted the longest was a replacement that I had in a drawer that was over 20 years old. The ones you get in the current parts store carburetor kits are made of stuff that just doesn't last. You know, an accelerator pump is a little mini toilet plunger is what it looks like. And when they fail, that little rubber thing or whatever it's made out of, just peels off, so now you have a stick instead of a toilet plunger. And
right. I've heard of that some people theorize that it's the ethanol in today's gas that rubber's not really called that compatible with and causes it to deteriorate. And there's, I think you can find some kits that have an ethanol safe or ethanol proof accelerator pump that won't fail so quickly.
Well, and you would think that'd be the case.
Find all that out.
But I don't know.
You would, yeah.
Today, I'm not sure, and I'm not the world's expert on fuel, but I don't know if there's very many places where you cannot buy ethanol-enriched fuel. Right?
I think certainly not in Illinois, you can't.
Yeah, maybe out in different parts of the country. But yeah, you're probably right. That's dissolving them. And you would just think that the parts suppliers would try to accommodate that. But who's buying carburetor parts anyway? You know, come on.
Right.
We don't matter anymore.
No. we're not part of their their demographic anymore.
No, we're definitely not the gravy train anymore. So
yeah.
You know, and on that note, this car also has the syndrome where if it sits for a few days, you gotta crank it to get it started. And it actually has an electric fuel pump from the factory in the tank, which is unusual.
Really? Really? From the factory?
Yeah, they started that in 69, and it's kind of, it's a low-tech deal, but it's very similar to a modern fuel pump, except it's low pressure, because it's a carburetor. And
right, sure.
The reason why you don't just turn the key and the pump fills up the fuel bowls and it lights off is because there is a safety device built in. The same way in a modern car, if you get in a wreck, there's a thing called an inertia switch that will turn off the high pressure fuel pump so you don't spray fuel into the engine bay if you have a fire, God forbid. But back in 1969 and 70, what they were doing is an oil pressure switch. So on the side of the block, there's a little electric switch that if the engine loses oil pressure, meaning it crashed or it stopped or something, it shuts the fuel pump off. And the hard part about that is if the car has been sitting and either the float bowl plugs in the bottom of the quadrajet have leaked and fuel has run out or fuel has run back out of the filter and into the fuel line, you have to build up oil pressure for the pump to kick on. So you got to crank it until it builds up, I think it's 7 PSI before it'll engage that pump and all of a sudden it'll start filling the bowl up with fuel.
Oh, geez.
And that's a quadrajet problem because these carburetors have a pair of plugs that are epoxied or I think they were lead kind of from the factory for a while in the bottom of the bowls, and over time they leak. And there's a secondary leak point, and it's that fuel filter I was just telling you about. The front entry of the carburetor can leak back down the line, and it will just siphon the fuel out of the fuel bowl to some degree. So this past week I learned of a modernized fuel filter, believe it or not, that's got a rubber check valve built into it. And you go to your parts store and you request this and everybody looks at you like you've got a third head because, you know, just asking for a fuel filter for a carburetor in the first place is bizarre, but then a specific one with a check valve, you know, they're like,
right.
What?
Sure.
But I obtained a couple of these things. It was kind of funny. My local parts store had a picture on their computer screen of their filter, and it had the little check valve. So I had them grab two of them from the back shelf and bring them up, and they did not have the thing in reality. They were just a regular filter. So they called seven different stores locally, and nobody had the filter that matched the picture. It was the exact same part number.
Oh, geez.
So now I've got this,
interesting.
You know, wild goose chase going on amongst all these stores, and it turns out the one I ended up with that was successful is a Fram part number that you can still get, and they special ordered them in, and now I installed one. I put this in the V8 forum on my Buick Riviera saga.
With pictures. I read that. Absolutely, that was pretty interesting. I didn't know that you could get a fuel filter like that. That was good to know.
Yeah, so if you have a carbureted car and it sits and doesn't start, before going through the hassle of taking the carburetor apart and re-epoxying those lower plugs or doing a full rebuild, you might want to try just popping that filter in because it seems to have helped to a certain degree in this case. It didn't cure it, but it's better. So that's my tech tip for you.
Okay, well, that's cool. Better is better.
Better is better. Yes, thank you.
Better is better. I think I just channeled my inner Yogi Berra.
Yeah, that's nice. And nobody goes there anymore. It's too crowded.
Yeah, exactly. That's perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Oh, lovely.
Well, you and I have talked about the concept of, you know, now that we're a good part of the way into this show, we had talked about the concept of throwing out a trivia question towards the beginning to allow people to have something to agonize over in addition to the regular agony of listening. And did you do you have anything lined up that we could tease them with now with an answer?
As a matter of fact, I do have a good trivia question.
All right.
On the ready.
Well, whip it out.
All right. Here goes. Okay. The Playmates had a hit in 1958 called Beep Beep, which describes a race between a Cadillac and what other car?
Ooh, I know this one. It was a Little Nash Rambler.
Hey.
But don't say if I'm right or not. Yeah, that's my guess.
God dang it.
It could be against a Hot Rod Lincoln or a little GTO or a 409 or a little Deuce Coupe. There were you know, a lot of car songs back then.
Right, so. Or a little Red Corvette or any of that.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
You know, it's funny because just the other day I was thinking that there aren't, correct me if I'm wrong, but there aren't very many or any new decent car songs. Continuing with our theme of, audio systems and music and cars, apparently.
Right. That's a great point. I can't think of a really cool car song that's come out recently.
And to be quite honest, a lot of the car songs from the 50s and 60s weren't that good either. They just feature cars.
But they're nostalgic now, so people want to hear them.
Yes. Yeah. Like, if I hear 409 one more time, I'm going to, claw my ears out. But it is part
of... Well, in my GTO club, I hear Little GTO at my car show probably 38 times over the weekend.
Yes. Yeah.
But I'm not complaining.
No. Well, and that's another great point, because the whole concept of what an entertaining car show is evolving. And personally, having the doo-wop and the oldies cranked up to 11, and it's usually broadcast either through like an air raid siren, so it sounds like it's coming through a paper cup with a string on it, the park PA system or whatever. Or it's, some mobile DJ service with a trailer, and they've got, concert audio, and they have this cranked up. And I don't, I actually run a charity car show. I belong to an organization called the Optimist International. And when I joined this group, they're like, hey, guess what? You get the car show, which is very cool. But one of the things that we've been trying to get away from is doing that kind of music, especially at that volume level and that repetition level, because I just don't think anybody digs it, except the show organizer or the guy playing it,
Right. Yeah, the same guy who wants to hear himself talk for 25 minutes over the loudspeaker. But yeah, I agree with you. The people going to car shows, if you want to attract a younger crowd, you just can't continue to play that Porcupine Chevy Chevelle song and Little GTO and 409 and all of those things. Maybe peppering them in there once in a while would be okay, but the whole show, that's for a younger guy, that's got to be a turnoff. For me, it's a turnoff when I hear it nonstop.
Right, and you're a young guy.
And just a young whippersnapper.
Well, and the opposite is true also. You don't want to, you don't want today's, up to the minute rap or dance music pounding either, because that's a turnoff as well. I don't know. What I've been doing is streaming there's a couple of good channels. In fact, one was actually streaming out of France, of all things, and it was a pretty decent mix of, a nice mix of 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, and today. but their program director kept it all at a fairly engineered pace, you know, so nothing was too dramatic either way or too dynamic. And then keep the volume down so that it's just kind of there.
Right. It's kind of background music. That, it's not like being featured so much and being super prominent, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and people have said that they kind of dig that, so that's good. And maybe the ones that hate it, they just haven't told me. You know, I'm sure they're out there.
Well, I mean, it's sometimes no one won't. A lot of people won't tell you that they don't like something. It's hard to get that out of somebody. They'll just complain about it to other people.
Yeah, right. So I guess if you do go to an event and you don't dig it, don't be afraid to tell them because the event organizers want this to be a good time and they want more people to come, so they'll listen. All right. Well, I have a trivia question as well.
All right.
And
whip
I
it out.
Think of, yeah, I will. I will. I'm going to whip it out slowly because it's. I'm trying to figure out how to rephrase this.
Okay.
Okay. There was a Car and Driver article in 1968 in which they, the magazine requested of the automakers a special request to build a particular car. And I think what they were going for was they wanted the automakers to build kind of a no-frills, high-performance muscle car that was available kind of cheap. And an automaker actually made the car. What do you think it was?
1968 they posed the question.
Yes.
Or they posed
Car and Driver
the
magazine said, hey, you know, muscle cars, you know, because if you follow the trajectory, these things kind of started off as basic cars with big engines, and then they started to become more laden with options and more expensive. And they wanted these things to be available to the lower buck crowd or the guy that just wanted something bare bones to go racing. So what do you think the response was in an actual car from one of the automakers?
Can you tell me what year it debuted?
Yeah, it actually was 68.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I guess I got to kind of rephrase that. I think the article probably came out earlier than that, but the car was a 68 model year.
The car was a 68.
The car was a direct response to this challange, if you will.
Oh, wow.
So that just helped you out quite a bit.
Yeah. Oh, gee whiz. So a car that your average Joe can afford, a muscle car that your average Joe can afford. Is that kind of the gist of it?
That's it, yeah. But it was...
Shoot. 68.
And the reality behind this question is that there's no doubt in my mind that the particular automaker was already on this path, you know, and it just happened to line up with the Car and Driver thing, but it's widely regarded as being kind of a direct response.
All right. I will say the AMC Hornet. That's my guess.
That's your official guess, the AMC Hornet.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I have noted your guess.
All right.
Actually, I'm about to note that right now.
Okay.
Looking for something to note that on. All right. 1968 AMC Hornet. There you go. Okay, you've been officially noted, and we will. We will show our cards at the end of the episode here.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. So, what else? I almost hate to bring it up, but we were kind of touching on the GTO a little bit. Have we heard anything about the engine build story? Or
we haven't, but I've kind of been going down the rabbit hole of a new obsession lately. And so it's been taking my mind off of my lack of progress. For Christmas I got a drone.
Really?
And I've been just diving head first into this thing. And loving it. It's from a company called DJI. It's their Phantom 3 standard. And this thing is real. It's like a prosumer kind of a product where it's not quite pro, but it's better than your average consumer grade. It's got a great camera on it. It's got a 3-axis gimbal on it, so your shots are always steady when you're flying. It's not jerking around all over the place. And it has a lot of really cool features to it, and I've just been, you know, obsessing day and night over this thing, just trying to fly it and learn it. And so it's been a great distraction for me. So
that is fantastic. Now, they're killer drones. The footage is awesome, especially if you have somebody that you need something cool to shoot, but B, if you've got a place to do it. So have you been just kind of droning around in your neighborhood and you know, peeking in the neighbor's windows, or, you know, what do you think?
No, I did fly in the neighborhood just to kind of test it out a little bit. It's super stable because it has a GPS built into it. So it has a GPS hold. So if you take your hands off of the controls, it stops flying. It just hovers in place. So it doesn't drift anywhere or do anything really crazy. And you could just lift, you know, go up above all the houses and kind of fly around. And your phone actually ties into it, so you can see what the camera's seeing in real time. So you can just fly it all over the place. Even if you don't see it, you know where it's going, and you can kind of still guide it back to where you are. And there's plenty of where I live. There's plenty of open fields you can go to and fly around and you know, not, you know, bother anybody. But I mean, and there's restrictions, and you have to register it with the FAA, which I did, and makes it all official.
Well, but you know, being former Air Force airman probably helped that out a little bit.
Yeah, well, yeah, it got me into the front of the line.
Well, that is cool, and we have some experience with those. In fact, last year at our drive-in cruise event, two gentlemen brought drones out and shot some very cool footage of flying around in the drive-in.
Oh, cool.
You could see all the cars that were there, and they didn't do it during the movie in the dark, but as people were coming in. But the other one that's super cool, and you'll see this soon in our VATV story of restoring the Comp Cam's Camaro, the final driving shots, a lot of it was shot with a drone.
Oh, no kidding. And,
we got some major freaking burnouts with the drone overhead right behind the car, and it is just sweet. It is so cool.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The shot that I've always wanted, and I don't know, it seems to be a little bit tricky because, and seeing that you're a certified FAA licensed drone pilot now, maybe you can answer this. It seems to me that the shot that I want is a perfect circle around a car.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be a challenge because I think the drone navigation is primarily grid based. It's kind of left, right, forward, back, kind of up, down. And is it possible to do a smooth arc and stay focused on the center point?
It totally is. In fact, that's a flight feature. It's called point of interest. And when you engage that, you fly over the subject you want to circle around, and you hit a button to say that's your point, and then you move the drone out. It has to move out at least, I think, 18 feet from that point, and then you lock that into place, and then you apply everything, and it just starts turning a nice, easy circle as fast as you want. Around that subject, and it's really smooth. I was playing with that feature last week, and it does a great job. I mean, you can go you time how fast you want the circle to complete. So if you want the circle to complete in 5 seconds, it's going to do it in 5 seconds, and it's going to be really smooth. Oh, it is, Kevin. It is so cool what you can do with this thing and the shots you can take. Absolutely.
It blows my mind to think of how this thing even does it.
I know. How complex that it has to be. I mean, flying is a crazy business by itself. But when it's doing it automatically, all the calculations it has to make and know where it is at all times based on your GPS signal, it's nothing short of just magic, for crying out loud, as far as I'm concerned. It's like black voodoo, and I don't care because I love it.
Yeah, right, exactly. And I think being, you know, if you look at it from an analog standpoint of trying to fly a machine and consider everything, it is unbelievably complex. From a digital standpoint, right now to their point, obviously, where almost anything is possible, you just got to request it so somebody can write the code, you know, and it's just as simple as that. So it's cool that they are creatively coding these things to do that kind of stuff. So that the next challenge would be to have that thing do that point of interest arc around a moving vehicle.
Yeah,
and I don't know how they would.
Yeah,
do that.
Well, that would be good. I mean, they do something, not arcing around, but there's a another feature called Follow Me, where you, when you engage that, as long as you're moving, the drone will stay focused on you and keep moving along with you. I mean, you can be driving and you can be walking, and it just sticks with you. But it can't.
And I've seen
it won't
that.
Go around a moving object.
Yeah, I imagine if you had some kind of a visible GPS target in the car of some sort that it knew to look for, you know, then it could. And I also understand that there's a speed limitation. So how fast does yours fly?
About 37 miles an hour is its top speed.
Okay, yeah. And that would be plenty for the shot, you know. Obviously, we'd like to recreate, you know, the car chase from Ronin or something where it's, you know, all high speed on the highways, but that is very cool.
Yeah, that is cool. I mean, some of these really top-notch ones will go, you know, 65, 70 miles an hour. That, I mean, they cost like, you know, $4,000.
But, right. Well, today they're going to get cheaper, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they are cheaper. So, this one, it was on sale. It was like $399, which I thought was a steal based on what you're getting. I mean, it is probably the best value of any drone on the market today. Absolutely, by far. For what you're getting, the price you're paying, it's probably the best one you can ever have.
Yeah, that is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm not super broke up about my GTO right now.
Well, good. You need diversions. Diversions are good. And at least it's a cool one. You know, it's not like you know, you're having some kind of surgery or something that, you know, has kept you away from it. Have you
drinking too much or something?
Yeah, right. Well, you need to share some of that stuff. So, you know, go on and do a demo shot with that point of interest thing, and I'd like to see that in action. Put it on put it on the VATV Facebook page or something, and I'd like to check that out.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah, if it's nice tomorrow, I'll do that tomorrow. And
there you go. Now
you
got an excuse to go play with it.
Yep. I wanted to play with it today, but I originally wasn't supposed to go. We were talking earlier. I wasn't supposed to go to out to Wrigley, but I kind of got I don't want to say pushed into it, but
you got voluntold.
Yeah. Yes, that is perfect. I got voluntold.
Well,
oh, Jesus. So, yeah. So by the time I got back, the sun was starting to set. I'm like, well, I guess that's out today. God dang it. Today would have been a great day to go out to an empty field and just do stuff. But,
Well, yeah. Maybe tomorrow you can grab some. That'd be cool.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, we got a new toy in the shop, as a matter of fact, speaking of some high-tech stuff.
Do tell.
We've got a thermal camera now that we're playing with.
Oh, and, dig it. Oh, yeah, is that? I saw a didn't you post a picture of a radiator?
I did. Yeah. The V8 Speed and Resto Shop Facebook page. And I'll tell you what, you want to talk about a whole new level of cool. Well, not to use cool because thermal related.
Right. But, yeah, I get it. No pun intended. Hey-o.
Yeah, and this is something that I've wanted to get for a long time. We've been using the laser pyrometer temp guns, you know, that are pretty commonplace to check temperatures on things. But I'm kind of a geek when it comes to tech, so I also want to know what's happening, especially if we restore a car and we're going to start this thing for the first time or drive it for the first time. I want to make sure that everything's working and things that are working smoothly, basically. So we had kind of an interesting scenario with a truck we were working on that was having some temperature problems, and by utilizing the thermal camera, this thing it's made by Seek Thermal, and it allows you to get a full picture with a crosshair in the middle that will tell you the actual temperature of the thing that you're pointing it at in the middle of the screen. And then it's got a color gradient from cold being blue to hot being white that it will lay out the spectrum in this image.
Oh.
And that constantly adjusts in normal mode. So whatever the hottest thing in the picture is going to be white, and the coldest thing is going to be black, essentially. Sure. Or you can program it so that if you want to know, you know, if your thermostat's 180 degrees, 180 will be red. And, you know, the coldest thing might be 60 degrees, and that will be the blue point, if you will.
Right.
So you can program what the spectrum is going to be. And you play with this thing for 2 minutes on a running engine, and you will learn years worth of knowledge. It is incredible.
Wow. That is incredible.
Yes, because the first thing is, at a glance, you can see... is the thermostat, you know, what's the engine temperature and where are the hot spots, and is the thermostat opening and closing? Are the heater hoses blocked? Is the heater core functioning? How's the radiator operating? And the picture that I posted showed this radiator that the top of it was over 170 degrees and the bottom of the radiator was 70 degrees and had 100 degrees of variance.
That's crazy.
It is, top to bottom. So I know that radiator is working awesome.
No doubt.
But interestingly, it's got an automatic transmission, and the trans lines were cool going in and out of this thing. So, like ice cold. So that tells me the transmission wasn't even up to operating temperature, but we had driven this car for 20 minutes by taking this photograph. So
that is unreal.
Yeah, do I have something going on there? And we can see fuel temperatures and anything you want. So we've been checking things like, if we go to the dyno and I got a car on the rollers, I'm looking at the rear axle temperature. I'm looking at the differential. I'm looking at the rotors and calipers. Do we have one that's hotter than the other? Is something dragging? Is something causing a problem? It's really neat. So that becomes
a really trick.
Yeah, it becomes a tuning tool that we can offer, you know, when our customers come in, if they got some kind of a problem, we can see right away, you know, what it is and where it is. And then you can compare it back to the gauge and the dash. You know, if the car is supposed to be running at 180 and the gauge says 180, but, you know, all the evidence under the hood is saying that it's running at 210, you know, then we know there's something up. So it's trick.
That is trick. And that shows you in real time. So you can
watch.
Real time. You can watch the temperature just slowly increase when you start an engine up that's cold. You can just watch as it's warming up.
Well, it's kind of creepy because I keep talking about thermostats, but if you watch a hot engine and the thermostat open, all of a sudden the hose turns red real time from front to back, you know, as it reaches the radiator.
That is pretty slick.
It's best explained in video, and we will be doing a video on it. I posted those pictures on the Facebook group, or on the V8 Speed and Resto Shop Facebook page, and I don't think anybody gets it. They're like, oh, look, bright colors, you know, and you can't really tell what's going
on. Move along.
Yeah, that's not a Camaro. What the heck? You know, so.
That's funny.
So we'll do a video demonstration, and some of the variants of these cameras will record video, and this one takes snapshots of stuff and things like that. I learned that the hottest part of the front of my cat is his eyes, and right behind his eyes by his ears. You know, I also
Well, good to know.
Part of the market is the outdoor market for these things, because hunters use them to see what's in the woods, because they will show you. You know, looking through, and it was kind of creepy. I brought the thing home to check my house. I wanted to see if I got a heat leak somewhere. You know, am I heating the outside or got a thermal problem? And I'm looking in the backyard, just looking at the camera in the dark, pitch dark. And here comes some kind of visitor. I guess my neighbor's cat came by. And
it was
a little creepy because you can't see him.
Yeah,
we've got a lot of new video coming. The Comp Cams restoration story in video is coming together. We're not quite finished with it, but we will be pretty soon, and it's going to be multiple VATV television episodes and also, of course, online video and social and all the rest of it. But our crew, the guys working on the car did a bang-up job, but they've also done a great job with telling the story and doing the video side of it. It's I'm excited about this one. It's a little bit different than some of the more typical VATV presentations. Because we got a lot more voices involved. We had a lot of people involved, so you're going to see a lot of faces, which is good.
Yeah, that is good. Yeah, I'm sick of looking at Trevor all the damn time.
Yeah, well, we don't want this to be a reality show, you know, right. But it definitely has more personality in it, so it's cool. That's coming soon.
Yeah, that
is
good.
On the side.
For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. Well, speaking of good stuff, your last Muscle Car of the Week episode was pretty slick. That 70 CUDA convertible with the 440. That was a nice looking car.
Yeah, that's a heck of a car. Yeah, boy, thank howdy. You. That is an insane car. And I think the episode storyline, we kind of downplayed it a little bit because that car is so over the top in many ways. I thought it'd be kind of fun just to tell a little bit of the story and not pound it into people's heads that this is one of 17 that was built and, you know, it's an insanely expensive car and all the rest of it. I just kind of wanted the car to be the car because it's such a cool car.
It is a really cool car, man. It's beautiful. Those burnouts are outrageous.
Well, it's a 440 with a six barrel. And a four-speed, so it's made to do burnouts, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm not complaining about that.
Yeah, and there's a whole bunch of those CUDA convertibles in the Brothers collection, so the last thing that we ever want to suggest is that any one of them is less special than any other.
Right.
You know, and it's funny, some of the feedback is like, oh, yeah, great, here's another CUDA convertible, and it's like, are you kidding me? You know,
really?
Chance to see these things ever is super, super rare these days.
Right.
And here we're just thrashing this thing to the end right in front of you. and you're going to give me that.
Yeah. And you're going to give me feedback. You're going to give me back talk like that. Come on.
Yeah. Right. But no, most people are obviously very gracious and enjoy them. And that's why we do them is to share these cars. And it's a lot of fun. I was a little bit, that particular car is Alpine white with the tan interior. Mm-hmm. And when I first saw it, it was inside. It wasn't outside. It was in one of the buildings where the cars are kept. And it was kind of dark. And I'm like, oh, this is not a very photogenic car, you know? Mm-hmm. And not that was going to prohibit us from shooting it, but just looking at it, I'm like, yeah, you know, white doesn't really show off the body lines and the tan interior. We brought it outside. It's got that hockey stripe on it. I was like, this car kills. It was just very cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. I dug that one a lot. I dig them all, but that one was really special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really neat. And that 440, you know, I was talking before about the accelerator pump. That's always the problem on those things, especially the Hemi cars, the dual quad 426 Hemi cars seem to eat accelerator pumps. The guys that handle the cars for Muscle Car of the Week, it's like they've got accelerator pumps for Hemis in their pockets all the time, you know?
No kidding.
Because whenever we get out there and we're getting ready to shoot, it's like, oh, I got to put another accelerator pump in real fast. I'll be back. And they can do them in seconds now because they're so good at it. Mm-hmm. But the three two barrel, six barrel setup, which by the way, I've been corrected more than once because I mistakenly called the Plymouth version a six pack. The Dodge is the six pack. The Plymouth is the six barrel. But the six barrel, system seems to be pretty reliable even in a multi-carb setup on a 440. So it's pretty surprising.
Good stuff, man.
Yeah.
Hell of a commentary on Mike's part.
Yeah,
good stuff,
that?
Man.
But sometimes the truth can be kind of simple.
Exactly. Oh, good Lord.
Yeah. So we've been in project planning stage right now, and I hope this one comes to fruition the way everybody would like it to. I don't know if I've mentioned before, but we've got a 57 Nomad in the shop. It's a red car with a small block and AC, and it was restored a couple of years ago, and it's a very nice car. And the customer wants to ratchet it up about 80 notches, you know, not 100 notches, but about 80 notches.
80 notches. All right.
We already have a supercharged LSA engine for it and a 6-speed manual and some pretty trick parts. We're going to do a color change on it and a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So this past week, we've been going through the exercises of trying to figure out, you know, what it's going to take and what it's going to cost to make this dream come true. And that is without a doubt the most challenging aspect of being in this business. Because as you can imagine, every single car is different and they all have different condition levels when they come in and they all require different stuff. And then of course the owner wants something unique that isn't found anywhere else. So, I wish, you know, it was nice today to be able to get out and drive around and not have to be looking at spreadsheets and numbers, because it's not every day in the muscle car shop, you know, contrary to popular belief, we're not doing burnouts and dyno sessions and welding and grinding all day long in every department. Sometimes.
You're not?
Yeah, exactly. Ah,
geez, there goes my dream of owning a restoration shop. God damn it.
Well, it's still, I'm not complaining about it. Just some of the differences are sometimes you gotta plan stuff out and try to figure out a way to say, okay, well, here's what we think and here's why, but we don't really know because we haven't taken this car apart yet.
Mm-hmm.
But the owner's a very cool guy, and we've done projects for him in the past, and
Good.
We're in that middle point now where it's like, well, you know, where do you, we threw out a pretty big number because he asked for a lot of stuff. And now you start doing the compromises and pulling out a few things that might not quite be as important, or maybe the additional steps that happen later, you know, let's just get the meat of the project done now or whatnot. So,
Yeah, maybe those gold plated wheels aren't quite what I need right now. We can probably take that off the budget.
Yeah, are you kidding me? Those will even match your car.
Yeah, they would, right?
Yeah. Did you ever see a gold GTO with gold plated Hurst wheels on it?
Yes, I have.
I've seen that car too. I was not a big fan.
Yes. No. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of gold plated stuff. I mean, I like the gold paint on my car, but gold plated stuff, eh.
Well, that's a funny thing. On the 57 Bel Air, the Bel Air trim had a gold, you know, anodized insert in the grill, and it's got the gold V on the nose, and it's got the gold little vents on the fenders, you know. And it's a 50s kind of gold. It's not like, you know, 24 karat, you know, rap star chain gold bling kind of stuff. But that's part of our discussion this past week. It's, are we keeping that? Are we going to change that color? You know, and does it lose the fact that it is a Bel Air and not just a, you know, a 210 or a regular Chevrolet or whatnot? So.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it will not have gold plated wheels.
Okay, good.
Much to your chagrin.
All right, good. Much to my chagrin. Yeah. I need a little bling bling.
Yeah.
Oh, good heavens.
Well, I think I'm kind of curious at this point. I kind of want to know the answers to the, or at least one of the answers to the trivia question at this point.
All right, then. The answer to the trivia question, the Playmate, well, let's recap. The Playmate had a hit in 1958 called Beep Beep, which describes a race between a Cadillac and what other car? And, Kevin, your guess was?
A Little Nash Rambler.
A Little Nash Rambler. And ding, 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 you are correct again, sir.
Wow,
it
fantastic.
It was, in fact, a Nash Rambler.
Well, that, I'm very familiar with the song, and I'm not a giant fan of the song, but in a previous life, you have to remember, I was a 6 p.m. to midnight, 5-night-per-week DJ on an oldie station when I was in college.
Oh, God dang it. Yeah, I forgot that. So, oh, I would have come up with a better question had I remembered that.
Yeah, I shouldn't have told you that because now, you know, I would have aced all your music questions.
Yeah, shoot.
So I wasn't necessarily cheating. I was cheating, you know, 25 years ago when I was doing that stuff. And that's part of the reason, I guess, why maybe at the car shows today, I'm not a super big fan of that, because when you play that stuff, you know, 6 hours a night straight every night of the week and have it, you know, a playlist that seemed like it was probably only about 25 songs, your sanity level depletes rapidly. So
sure.
There was quite a period of time when I could not even hear that stuff anymore. If I was flipping through a station, I heard the oldies, I was like, oh my, I mean, I just had to shut it off.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but now I have a newfound appreciation. I do dig them to a certain extent, but
All right. Have
not heard that one in many, many years.
Yeah, well, right, actually, so, I heard it a couple weeks ago. That's what kind of made me think of that question.
Like, really? Oh, where did you hear it?
It was on some station I was listening to. I don't know where it came from, but it was, I think I was in the car with my wife or something. She was listening to some oldie station, and there it was. I'm like, oh, God, I haven't heard this song forever.
So somebody played it.
I mean,
it.
I mean, it's a totally different point of view between you and me, because, I mean, where you heard those all the time, I've maybe heard that song maybe three other times in my life, and, you know, I remember it. And when it comes on, I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember this song. It's kind of snappy and catchy, where you're, you know, digging your eyes out when you hear it again, for Pete's sake.
Beep, 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 beep. His horn went beep, beep, beep.
So beep, beep, beep. Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Yep, that's it. So on the question that I posed, in the 1968 model year, there was a car that was released that is storied to have been a direct response to a gauntlet thrown down by a Car and Driver editorial, which requested of the big three that somebody please make a back to basics muscle car again instead of these fancy striped up expensive things. And a 1968 model rolled off the assembly line that matched that criteria. What was the car?
God, and I said Hornet, and that's not even, I mean, would AMC wouldn't even be part of the big three.
Well, that's kind of what my original thought was.
Shoot. It just depends on who you ask. Now. God dang it, you moron.
Yeah, if you ask Bob Ashton from the Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals, you know, AMC was the big number one, and the rest of them were you know, two, three, and four. He's a huge AMC fan.
Oh, all right.
He's got a Hornet, I believe.
No kidding.
Which is, yeah, a yellow one. Pretty cool. So that is, unfortunately, that's incorrect, sir.
Yeah.
We need to get the horns, the wah, wah. Mm.
yeah, we need some production value put on this show.
Yeah, right. Well, the car was actually the 1968 Plymouth Roadrunner.
No kidding.
Yeah, the Roadrunner. The base Roadrunner, not the GTX or not the the R12 car or the A12 cars or anything like that. The base Roadrunner was supposed to be a basic car. And today, there's a few of them that are out there that have some power options and some frills on them. But the vast majority of Roadrunners are bare bones. They came with the 383 as the base engine. So they were meant to be cheap and fast, which is why we like them.
Yeah. Cheap and fast is good.
Absolutely. All right, so keeping score, I'm ahead of you by one, but we'll find out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well.
It's all right. I feel a rally coming on, so I'm gonna start catching you.
Right on. Mm-hmm. Well, think of a good one for next time. And
I
recommend anything that has to do with oldies music is a sure bet, so go for those.
Okay. Yeah, sure. You got it, buddy.
Right. Good.
Right on.
All right, man.
Who's
saying
Little GTO?
Yes. There you go. Yes. You know, actually, my favorite version of the Little GTO was in the Volkswagen GTI commercial. Remember that? There was in the 80s, Volkswagen pirated Little GTO and did a version of Little GTI for the Golf, you know, the Rabbit performance car.
Well, I remember them doing that Chuck Berry song. that rolling along in my automobile. It was rolling along in my GTI.
Yep, it was that same time period. I think the same same ad agency did both of those.
Yeah, probably.
There were a lot of good VW commercials. My all-time favorite is still Unpimp Your Auto.
I still look those up on YouTube.
And that was only about 10 years ago, I think.
Right, right, right. I remember my favorite part was her pointing to some gaudy snorkel on this guy's hood. Says, "What does this do?" And the guy says, "It sucks in air." And then the lady says, "It's definitely sucking."
Yes, exactly right. The fembot chick is definitely sucking.
Yeah, it's definitely sucking.
Or she peels a sticker off and says, "You get an F," and sticks the thing on the back of the car.
Yes.
Yeah, I got to go look that up again. That's good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those were pretty funny commercials.
Yeah.
I remember, not to get off on a tangent, but I remember way back there was a commercial for the Corrado. It was a water-cooled sport coupe and supercharged. Says there's two ways to get your Volkswagen to go 120 miles an hour, and they had a Beetle that was being hoisted up from a helicopter, and they dropped it from 1,000 feet in the air, and then they also had this Corrado ripping down the road going 120. So there are two ways to get Volkswagen to go 120.
That is awesome, and I had forgotten about that ad, and it's funny, I almost forgot about the Corrado, but I had its its older cousin with the Scirocco.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I used to own a Corrado way back in the day.
Really? Did you have the supercharged version?
Yeah, the G60. It was a 1990 Corrado G60. You could only get it in a five-speed manual in 1990. That's the only transmission available at that point.
There you go. It was a bad little machine.
It was a fun car. Yeah, it was a fun car. I mean, when everything was hitting right on it, it was a great car to drive, but it was probably the most frustrating car I ever owned in my life.
Hmm.
But the engine management system was really schizophrenic. Didn't want to necessarily enrich when you were supposed to. When you floored it, it would sometimes fall on its face. The supercharger was really fragile and complex and expensive to repair when it ever wore out, and it was tough. But there was a decent aftermarket support for it, and people really got those things to move out pretty well. But like I said, it was frustrating, but also super fun at the same time.
Yes, the complete opposite of the bundle of joy GTO at this point.
Yeah, that's just plain old frustrating right now.
Not at all frustrating. And
yeah,
laughs at every turn.
Exactly.
All right, man. Well, time flies again. Appreciate you hanging out, and we'll have. There's a comment section on the website. If you click on the actual headline of the individual episode, if you go to v8radio.com and look at the homepage, the comment function is not there. You got to click on the title of the article, and then you will see the comments feature. I don't know why it does that. Maybe we'll change it at some point if the technology allows. But if you have any feedback, we're welcome. You're welcome to post that stuff there, as long as it's civil and positive. And we'll take suggestions, maybe trivia question ideas or whatnot, and we'll go from there. So
sounds great.
All right, man. Well, thanks again, and we will see you next time, or talk to you next time on V8 Radio.